Let's take a look at the mysterious spirit world. After all, we haven't even begun living our life yet. We're still living in the material womb of our physical life. We have a lot to consider. Let's get started. Well, you know, some people have mystical experiences and some people don't, and some people are kind of skeptical about it. And so I thought we'd take a step back and just kind of look at it from a very beginner's point of view. By the way, how many of you might have had some spiritual experience in your life? I'm sure some of you are raising your hands. Actually, I think probably all of us have had spiritual experiences in our life, but I think maybe a lot of times we don't recognize it as a spiritual experience. For example, how many of us have ever experienced that you feel like somebody's looking at you from behind and you just want to turn around and see who's looking at me? Well, what is that? Some energy beam coming out of somebody's eyeball and tickling your hair? Well, I think that's a spiritual experience, if you ask me. I think we have many. We're not spiritual people. We're not physical people with a spirit. We are spiritual people with a body for a while. So I think we're very spiritual beings, and sometimes I think we don't even recognize that. But let's go back to the very beginning for people who might be skeptical or whatever, and just ask the question, why do things happen in my life? Well, there's many reasons. One reason things happen in my life is because of choices, right? Choices I make. If I choose to leave my car keys in the car at Walmart while I go in shopping, I shouldn't be too surprised when I come out to get my car, I might be gone. You know, that's not indemnity, that's indemnity. Making stupid choices. We all do that sometimes. Our habits. If we leave our underwear and socks and clothes on the floor in the bedroom and the bathroom, then you wonder why our wife is yelling at us all the time about it. You know, that's maybe our diet. If we choose to eat sugar and grease all the time, we shouldn't wonder why we're 350 pounds and have diabetes and other sicknesses and, you know, not healthy. Things happen in our life. Our chemistry. Sometimes we have chemical imbalances and we need some supplements or, every human being needs vitamin C. For example, we don't manufacture enough vitamin C in our body as human beings. Animals do, but we don't. And there's one guy that wrote a book. He's not a church member, but he wrote a book saying he thought that was probably the case because of Adam and Eve fell in the Garden of Eden. I thought, wow, pretty good. I don't know, maybe. Things happen in our lives sometimes because of our genes. That's why I got so much skin up here on my forehead. I guess it's connected to my uncle or something. I don't know what they say about that. All kind of things. Things happen in my life because of our environment. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the natural environment, the trees and the bushes and the rivers and stuff, but it could also mean my social environment, the kind of people I hang around with, the kind of friends I have, or the kind of family I grow up in, you know, the kind of home. If there's shouting and screaming and complaining and blaming and criticizing going on 24 hours, bullying, and it's tough, you know, how it can affect how and what things happen in my life, right? Luck. I was surprised one time, Father said, you know, some of you people join the Unification Church just because you're lucky. I thought, wow. He said, you didn't particularly have any, some people didn't particularly have any ancestral merit to join, just lucky. Wow. And we certainly things happen in our life because of restoration of ourselves, our own personal mistakes and things we do wrong in our life, as well as our ancestors, as you know. And the last thing I put on my list, maybe you can come up with a whole bunch of more things here, but is ancestry and spirit world. Now, you know, we'll talk about what that means. But the main point I want to bring out here in this kind of reflection, I guess, is that actually that ancestry and spirit world actually can affect all these other things. It can affect the choices we make, our ancestry and our spirit world. It can affect the habits that we form. Sometimes we find ourselves having the same darn habits that our mom and dad had, but it's not necessarily just because we learned them when we lived and grew up with them at home, but maybe it's an ancestral thing, you know, it could be. Our diet can be influenced by those things. I mean, we might have ancestors who were alcoholics or drug addicts and things, and we might find ourselves dragged into the same kind of dietary kind of problems or whatever, you know, how we eat or whatever. Chemistry, of course, genes can be affected by ancestry, environment, in other words, that social environment especially, what kind of people we're drawn to or what kind of people keep crossing our paths and we keep hooking up with, and of course, luck and indemnity and restoration, of course. So, you know, ancestry and spirit world seems to be a really big item that we need to try to look at and get some better perspective on in our life, if this is really true. So we have the human spirit, and we have, you know, the human spirit is invisible. This is but, you know, so a lot of skeptical people can think, well, you know, it's all your imagination. I mean, where is it? But there's a lot of things in life that we can't perceive, right? I mean, the room is full of radio waves, television waves, cell phone signals, and every other kind of thing, x-rays, and so, you know, there's a lot of things we can't perceive with our physical senses. So the whole universe actually seems to be divided into spiritual and physical. There's a spiritual universe and a physical universe. And the spiritual side is eternal, and as I said, we are a spirit with a body for a while, temporal spirit. Here's our basic diagram that we always refer to, just as a refresher here. We'll go right through this quickly, but we have a physical self, which we're very aware of, but we also have a spiritual self living inside of our physical self, resembling our physical self. And they nurture and nourish each other, and you know, we do good actions with our body, and it nourishes and nurtures and feeds our spirit, which in turn influences us to do more things like that. And it's all going up here actually, but yeah. And we have five physical senses, as you know, and we have five spiritual senses. You're all familiar with all that stuff. A brain and a mind. The mind is not the same as a brain, even though if you put electrodes and probes and chemicals in your brain, it does affect your thinking. But, you know, in spite of what the medical and psychiatric profession demand or won't let go of, it's doesn't mean that's where your mind is. Your mind lives on, even after the brain is dead and gone and rotted away in the grave. And there are plus and there are minus aspects to this. Now, you know, let me say something about this chart. This is an extremely simplistic chart, right? I mean, let's be honest. You show this to your biochemistry student in college or some science person, and, you know, they're going to laugh. They're going to think you're an idiot. I mean, this is so simplistic, right? But this chart does have a very real and useful and important practical conclusion. So that's the reason we have it. So it's valid. We use it for a reason, and we just need to, you know, make an apology for the simplicity of it, but it's got a very good and important conclusion to it. So we just need to recognize it so they don't think we're dumb. So, you know, like for example here, you know, a human being or a living thing needs a certain amount of heat, temperature. Okay, it's scientific, but it's very simplistic, right? That's all right. It's all right. It works. We need some light. We need some light, you know, be able to see our way around the sun and the moon. And okay. Air to breathe, yeah. You know, I mean, very, very simple. And on the spiritual side, the counterpart of those things is the warmth of love. Now, you know, that's more sophisticated. We need the warmth of love. I understand there was some psychological, psychiatric, or whatever, medical experiments done a long time ago somewhere. I read about my psychology book in school, I think. And anyway, they took a newborn baby and they gave it all the food, nourishment that it needed, but no human touch, no human presence, and the baby died. Right? And I guess that, I don't know if it was one baby or more than one, but anyway, it's a very terrible, cruel kind of experiment, right? But it proves the point. We need the warmth of love. We're made like that. And the light of truth. Ah, now I see the light. I'm enlightened, right? Okay. And the air is like the good atmosphere that I was talking about, you know, how to be surrounded by a good family, friends, environment, socially, you know. And then physically, the things we need to go after, that's what the minus sign means. We have to go after them. The other ones, the plus sign ones, are given freely by our environment. Food and water, yep. And exercise, yep. Well, here I am, you know, I don't get any exercise anyway. I think about it for many years, did. And now here I am sitting in a chair behind a camera. I mean, I'm half Italian. I like to move around, you know, to express myself. And now I'm sitting even more than I was before. Well, okay. Well, anyway, here's the value, the meat and potatoes of this simplistic chart right here. This is what really makes it worth using. The final conclusion here, we need spiritual food and we need spiritual exercise. In other words, the point here is, we need to walk the talk. Just believing something with your head is not really worth that much. And I'm not pointing my finger at people of other faiths and traditions and religions. I'm talking about us. You know, it's all the same for us. Just because you believe in true parents and the divine principle it's not really going to get you very far. It's not going to do much for you. It's like, yeah, that's nice. But unless we live it, unless we put it into practice in some practical way and live it in our life every day and become the Word of God, become God's personality, become a person of His love and truth, embody it, it's not worth much. It's not going to get us very far. So that's the value of this chart. And it's common sense. A lot of, you know, any people of other faiths will agree with you. It's wonderful, but, you know, to really do it. A lot of believers out there, a lot of believers in our own church, it's not worth much. Now, the spirit self looks a lot like the physical self, lives inside the physical self, right? Looks the same, but actually not always. That's a very simplistic statement also, right? Because it depends how much we've developed it. I mean, I had a spiritual experience one time of leaving my body. And when I left my body, I looked over to my right side and there was my great-grandfather. And I mean, I knew him when I was a little boy. So I knew who he was. He had his pipe and he had his little walking stick and little Italian man about that high. I never really heard his voice because he didn't speak to me ever, but he doesn't speak English. But he looked like a stick. I mean, his body was so undeveloped, his spirit. I can never forget it. All I ever saw him do was putter around his garden. His wife had passed away, and he never talked. He never related to anybody that I ever saw. And just a little, lonely, quiet Italian man, and he was so undeveloped, he looked like a stick. I was shocked. I knew who it was. Another thing, so, and Damonim said, you know, she said, if your face was scarred and marred and you had blisters here and there, she said, you would be shocked when you look in the mirror and you'd do something about it. She said, it's too bad you can't see your spirit, Because she said, if you could see your spirit in the mirror like you can see your physical body, she said, you wouldn't live the kind of life you live. And I thought, wow. These are important things to hear, you know, important things to reflect on. Also, in Mrs. Yu's book, I mentioned that to you the other day, right? This book, A Testimony to God's Word. Mrs. Yu talked to Father, and she's got a testimony in there about Father said that when we join the church, a number appears on our forehead. He can see it for every year that we're in the church. And he said the first 3 years that you're in the church, your good ancestors help you all they can. They support you. They're like wind under your wings. How wonderful. And then he said after the first 3 years, they kind of back off into the background. And the rest of your ancestors come forward and they give you as much trouble as they can. But they have a limited period of time to do that. Father said that after 40 years, when the number 40, you're 40 years in the church, when you graduate from your 40th anniversary in the church, he said the numbers disappear and your troublesome ancestors have to leave. They used up their time. And he said, your life should become easier then after that. Very interesting. You can read all of it. She's got a whole chapter in there about that. I thought it was neat. Anyway, I can sense maybe that's my experience. It's hard to confirm those things, right? So when we die, we don't have the physical self. We just have the spiritual self and the spiritual senses, right? So what happens when we die? What will happen when you die? Well, here we are, you know, this lady's dying. And, you know, we have all these testimonies, right? The tunnel with the light at the end, you know, and somebody comes down to help you, you know, lead you into the spiritual world. Might be your mother, might be your father, might be your uncle or somebody who's artistically close to you or an angel or somebody. I mean, we heard all that. And then your life flashes before you in just a moment or a brief time, you know, in your whole life. And as I said the other day, life, you know, 70, 80 years of life is so short. Anyway, those things happen, right? We go to the spiritual world, you know. And by the way, when you have that give and take between your physical self and your spiritual self on that diagram, I forgot to mention, you know, it's not always positive, right? I mean, I forgot to mention that. You know, you do good things in your life and it feeds and nourishes your spirit to grow in a positive way. But if you do negative, bad things, unprincipled things with your life, you damage your spirit. That's why Damon said, you, if you could see yourself, you wouldn't live the way you live. So it goes both ways. We can nourish and make our spirit more healthy, or we can damage it. We definitely can damage it, and we do, by how we live sometimes. So we go to the spirit world and we encounter what? Lots of things. You've all seen What Dreams May Come more than once, and it's a fantastic video and movie, and you know, there's more nature there than there is here. I'm told you can see music, you can see sound somehow, and colors that we've never had here, and you can see people and ancestors and angels, and you can do almost anything there that you can do here if you have a good heart, especially, and except have children. You can't have babies there. So many things. Father said the spirit world is in a different dimension from this limited earthly world. We cannot move freely within mundane confines here. But as the spirit world is a higher dimensional place, you can do anything there. You can leap across time. If you want something based on love, you can have it all anytime, anywhere. In other words, if you ladies want a 1,000-carat diamond ring, Father said, I remember his speech, you can have it. You want a new dress every day, change your hair color every 5 minutes, you can do all whatever you want if you have love in the spirit world. In the spirit world, there are no such things as 1 year, 2 years, or even a day. Wow. And, you know, Father's saying that whatever you want, if you have love, you can have it, right? Anytime, anywhere, You want $1 million? You want, a hot fudge sundae? You want a hamburger? Whatever, you can have it, right, anytime. Because your mind kind of creates it, like in What Dreams May Come, right? You're creating a reality. Father talked to us so many times about these things, and he said, I don't talk to you much about the kingdom of heaven, he said, because my kingdom of heaven is not going to be the same as your kingdom of heaven. He said, I might want a fish and stream in my kingdom of heaven, I might want a pool table or whatever, and maybe you're not into it. Maybe you want a golf course. I don't like golf, he said. In your golf course, the greens will move around and all be different every time you play. Our kingdom of heaven is created by our desires and our dreams and our wishes and our hopes, and we manifest that. Your internal self becomes manifested, so. There's as many kingdom of heavens as there are people. Wow. But see, the thing is, Father didn't talk about the other side of the coin. And we need to talk about that. He didn't talk about the other side of the coin. This is very serious stuff. For example, what I'm saying is, what about those dark things that you don't tell anybody about? Because you're not supposed to be like that. We hide in our flesh. We got places to hide here in the physical world, you got addictions, you're into this or that. But nobody knows, It's in the privacy of your bedroom or your home. You're into porn, you're into whatever, or maybe you have an eye for these beautiful chicks out there, those beautiful ladies, but your wife doesn't, you don't ever let on to your wife about it. She has no clue. She doesn't know you're looking at him and you're dreaming about him in your sleep. But guess what? The point is, the same thing applies when you go to the spirit world. Your internal passions and stuff is transparent. You're an open book. There's no place to hide there. You see what I'm saying? So we need to clean our house up here before we go too much further, because it could be embarrassing, right? Your wife's standing next to you in the spirit world, and here all these girls come flocking around you, and she's going to say, "What the heck is this?" And you're going to say, "Well, I have a problem. You didn't know about it." So we need to do some homework sometimes, there's no place to hide there. We need to deal with it. We have a beautiful mind, like in What Dreams May Come. We might, his lovely wife was a painter, and they were totally one in spirit and heart about the whole thing, and it became their reality, that house, that dream house they always wanted, and that tree and all this stuff, and it's just glorious, right? Because that's where their mind was at. That's where their heart was at. That's what they wanted. That becomes their reality. But what about the guy who's the loner, He doesn't like being around people and pesky old people with their fallen natures and everything. Who wants to hang around these, rather be with the horses and the dogs and live on the farm and the land or whatever. I like to be in the bars and where the smoke and whiskey and dim lights and I don't like these bright places, and of course that person wouldn't be happy in a place close to God, because it's too bright, too much of that love stuff going around. I'm not comfortable there. I'm going to get out of here. So you might find yourself here in your little shack out in the middle of nowhere in the spirit world. I'm sure there's a lot of these little shacks. And you don't want anybody to bother you. Don't come knocking on my door. And guess what? Nobody ever will come knocking on your door. No, they never will, forever. Yep. Forever. So here we are. I'm 65 years old, and I'm going to become one of those ancestors before too long, and I hope I can be a good influence on my great-grandchildren and my grandchildren and so on. and put wind under their wings, give them that, you know, I can impart to them my talents and my gifts and my, you know, some, you know, I'm a prayerful guy and I like spiritual things, and maybe I'll be a good influence in their life, you know, but if I've got some baggage, I may also be a drag in their life. I mean, that's us first generation, right? I mean, you know, it doesn't help to blame your ancestors, right? Because they all made the best choices they could every day with what they had to work with. They lived the best life they could live, that they were dealt in this card game of life. And there's no, you know, everybody's a victim since Eve, you know, so there's no reason to blame anybody. We're all in this together and we all need to grow together. So, you know, and Damon M. said that actually 85% of our personality is not my own. It's these invisible buddies hanging around, all this spirit world influencing me is 85% of my personality. Wow. You know, that's really important to understand. But for now, I'm like the lady sitting in the chair. I got all these buddies around me, right? They're invisible. I don't know who they are. And I might feel, hey, what the heck? I'm not, you know, what? Who are these people anyway? I didn't choose them to be my friends. This isn't fair. Why are they hanging around me? Why can't I have a different group of people hanging around me anyway? You know. Well, the thing is... What determines who these people are that are hanging around me? You know, Damon said in Zhengpian one time, she said, if you were perfected in heart, all the negative spirits would leave you instantly. So the meaning behind that is that there's a common base. There's a common base. That's why they're hanging around you. There's a common base. And, you know, for example, in prisons, a lot of times they have these prison ministries and they have a Bible study, or Muslims go in with a Quran, and they, you know, and sometimes some of the prisoners come to this Bible study or Quran meeting, and they, because they have nothing to do, and they're usually not really interested, but sometimes one or two prisoners takes us, you know, first time they ever opened a Bible, and they take a sincere interest in, like, hey, this is pretty interesting here. Look at this here. These people were pretty smart even thousands of years ago. What the heck? And they take an interest in it, and after weeks and months and years of this Bible study, what happens here is that, you know, if they really take a sincere interest in it, is that the thugs, the ancestors, the spirit people that helped put them in prison, they either get resurrected and helped out by this Bible study, or they take off because they're not interested in that stuff. But the good the good ancestors of this person, who maybe didn't have much relationship with them in the past, now here's John reading the Bible in the prison, and they think, what the heck, John's reading the Bible, hey, wow, let's get in on that, I've been waiting for that for a long time. And they gather around, and so the point is, over time, this person's spirit world can literally change dramatically. And this person, when they walk out of prison, is literally a different person than the one who walked in. And that kind of transformation from that immersion into something like that, changing their interests, can really work. I mean, the same thing happens with people in the military or in college or some other situation, you know, where, you know, this is what a lot of addiction remedial groups do, where they try to change their spirit world. They don't know what they're doing, but that's what they're doing. Changing your spiritual world. And this is what people who have deep spiritual problems have to do. Another problem can come along too is when, let's say there's a boy in a family, and he's his father's gone, or he never knew his father, and or his father died young, or whatever, and or just never had anything to do with the boy, and the boy's raised by the mother, and it's all fine and good. And I'm not saying this is always the case. Don't misunderstand this, but I suspect that in some cases, a very strong-handed, strong-willed woman, mother, can be very attached to her little boy, and even as he grows up, and it's all fine, it's all good. But when she goes to the spirit world, if she maintains that kind of real strong attachment to him, and he doesn't have that male, masculine man figure in his life, I'm sure that sometimes there can be some distortion in the person's personality from that kind of thing. I mean, I think it's important for men to be close, for dads to be close to their daughters, but even closer to their sons. That's my opinion. And I think mothers should be close to their sons and even closer to their daughters. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong about that. But I think it keeps everything kind of straight. So the point is, I'm trying to say, is that people are, who's responsible for this group of people, who they are, which ones they are, grouped around this person in the physical world? She is. I am. You are. You know, I think we blame our ancestors too much. You know, I was in Chungpyeong trying to help my daughter who has serious spiritual difficulties and stuff. And I was reflecting because I was informed that, oh, it's the victims of your ancestors from generations past. Okay. So these victims are full of revenge. Right. And I thought, you know, I was crying and praying and repenting and everything I could do in Chungpyeong to help my daughter and to deal with this kind of thing and everything. And I thought to myself in the prayer room, I thought, you know, why are they hanging around me? Putting everything together, two and two, and connecting the dots. And I thought, well, I'm not like that. Why are these, these revengeful spirits hanging around me or whatever? But in my reflection, I realized, you know, hey, you're not just so lily white clean yourself, you know. When somebody pushes you in a corner, you wake up. You start thinking, well, you know, you're not going to get away with that. I'll show you. I'll take care of you. We all got a little bit of this stuff in us, right? You know, it's deep inside. It's in there. It's in there. There's a common base in there. So I don't know. Maybe I'm imagining these things, but so many things to think about. So these spirits are attracted to her because she has a common base with them, whatever it is. So she decides who's hanging around in large measure. It's not completely, but largely. I mean, I heard the story, isn't it, about Beethoven, who was the great musician, right, the maestro. But actually, until he was 18 years old or something like that, he hated music. His father forced him to practice the piano like 8 hours a day, and he just hated every minute of it. But then, all of a sudden, boom, his spirit world just changed. You know, somehow he just united with it or something, and his soul spirit world just started flowing through him, and his creativity just flowed like a river, and he came up with all this composing and everything. It's just, you know, it's changed. His spirit world changed. But it was all due to him. Same thing is due to her. Same thing is due to me. And I'll give you a story about that at the end of our presentation tonight, too, just to show an example. So it's all a little bit like this magnet here. You know, this is the magnet is me, and all these ball bearings are these spirits that are out there. And I have certain qualities. I'm into painting. I'm into classical music. I'm into swimming. But I've also got some other things. You know, I'm into drinking and smoking and whatever. And so I attract the people in the spirit world that are like me. And then they become my invisible buddies. I don't know where who they are or what, but that's who is attracted to me. That's what happens. So how about resurrection? Resurrection, that's another related term here. It means coming back to life. It means somehow we must be dead. Person must be dead and they come back to life. Well, most, you know, too many people have interpreted that physically, right? They mean physical coming back to life. There are many people who actually believe that human beings wouldn't have died. We wouldn't be dying. There wouldn't be any death in our experience if it wasn't for Adam and Eve eating the apple in the garden. You know, that's what brought death into the world. And so when people bring to their attention, say, what, and ask them, well, what about those dinosaur bones, you know, those fossils and things we find that are millions of years old. And you know what the answer is? God put those fossils there to fool us, to trick us. Oh, geez. Anyway, of course, we know that actually the death that we're talking about is not physical, it's spiritual death. You know, Jesus was approached by a man who said, I'd sure like to follow you, Jesus, but I got to bury my dead father, you know, can't follow you right now. And Jesus said, let the dead bury their own dead. So that's a very handy quote there in the Bible. It helps us to realize that there's a spiritual death and there's a physical death. Let the spiritually dead people bury their dead brethren, and you come and follow me. He wasn't talking about physically dead people, of course. So that's how that works out. So resurrection, I mean, there's plenty of passages in the Bible to help us get the clear idea about it. It's just that people want to believe, they want to believe what they want to believe. And, you know, we have that problem too, but he who does not love remains in death, 1 John. He who does not love remains in death. Wow, if you don't love, you're dead. He who hears my word and believes him who sent me, he who hears my word and believes God has eternal life. He has passed from death to life. Well, clearly he's not talking about physical death here. I mean, there's no other way you can take it, right? To set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace, Paul said. Well, how can you take that physically? It seems pretty clear to me. And then there's this great story from Jesus, this parable he told about the spirit world. I don't know how many ministers use that. It's a whole page. It's a whole page in the Bible. And Jesus is relating this story about a rich man and a homeless man in the street. And they both die and they go to the spirit world. And the rich man thinks he's going to be with God because he's so good and he gave a lot of money to the church or whatever. And the poor man didn't have a nickel, and he was just, you know. But when the rich man and the poor man went to the spirit world, the rich man was far away. He could see Father Abraham at the gates of heaven, far away, and there was a big valley in between that he could not cross. But Father Abraham was embracing the poor man who had died. And he was, you know, being welcomed to heaven. It's like, and he said, what? And anyway, long story short, Jesus, this rich man begged Father Abraham to send send someone to his brothers alive on the earth to warn them, don't live like I did. You're going to be in bad shape like me. And the conclusion of the story that Jesus is giving here is explaining what coming back from the dead means. And it doesn't mean physically. It doesn't mean coming back from the dead physically. It's a very important story in Luke chapter 16. You know, we really, he's explaining what spirit world is like. And then there's the resurrection of Jesus, you know. I mean, most Christian people just are told, you know, conditioned to read the Bible and interpret it to mean that Jesus came back in the flesh, physically. I mean, they're told to believe, they're preconditioned to believe that. But you may know I wrote or edited the Divine Principle Study Bible, which is a very thorough investigation of the Bible, showing how the principle is expressed in the Bible and how the principle lines up with how the Bible lines up with the principle and so on. Anyway, in an exhaustive research of the Bible, you come to find out actually that the weight of evidence is solidly with the principle. In many areas, I mean, we have nothing to be shy about. The principle is solidly on our side. And in this case, for example, Jesus came back physically. There's only three passages that you could interpret that way if you want to, if you're inclined to. But we can explain those passages with the Bible, with the principle too. You know, we understand how to explain those. But in reality, there are 22 passages that clearly indicate that Jesus did not come back physically. He came back spiritually. I mean, it's just overwhelming evidence, but don't confuse me with the facts. I mean, you know. So, the death caused by the fall was not physically. The spirit lives eternally. The flesh doesn't, and so on like that. You know, that's the death is a spiritual death because of our relationship with the dark side. So, what change happens when we resurrect? In other words, come from spiritual death to spiritual life, become a person who has love, related with God, and all that kind of stuff. Well, this is a big issue, actually. We don't really stop to think about it much, but, you know, there's not really much external change. I mean, the person still sleeps and eats and goes to the bathroom, and, you know, they might be brighter than they were before, if you have eyes to see that, but... you know, they look like a regular person, even though they're the Messiah. And this is an issue. It's kind of a problem, because like Judas Iscariot, I mean, he was following Jesus around for over 2 years. Every day, hanging around. He was the treasurer. But, you know, things came up that he kind of lost sight of Jesus' divinity and got too fixated on Jesus' humanity. And lost sight of who he was. You know, I think it might be difficult to live in East Garden and take care of true parents for years, whatever. I can imagine it might be. Because, you know, gosh, they're real people. They get mad, they spit, they curse, they go to the bathroom, they fart, and they have to comb their hair and wash their face. And, you know, I think it might be possible sometimes for people to lose sight of the divinity and focus too much on the humanity. I mean, they are people. You got to give them room to be people. You know, they're human beings. I don't know. I think it's something to ponder. So what is rebirth? Many times when I'm teaching, I have young people especially ask me, what does it mean to be reborn? Father said we should be reborn. He was scolding us many times. How come you're not reborn? I mean, we had unpleasant experiences with this. Most of our members don't really seem to have had the experience that they can point to of rebirth. It's really painful for me. I came from a Christian background. I understand a little bit, you know, what both sides of this thing look like. I used to invite ministers, Black Baptist ministers, to come to our church here in Denver and give sermons. You know, I did that a few times, and I stopped doing that because, you know, they're looking for people to jump up and down and dancing in the aisles and shouting and hallelujah and speaking in tongues and all kind of stuff. That's what they're used to. And, you know, that's not Moonies. We're like the Lutherans, you know, the Catholics, you know, you don't. So it was not a good experience. They didn't have a good experience. It wasn't helpful. It wasn't a good witness. So, but what is rebirth anyway? What is this reborn stuff? I think, trying to come up with an answer for people, that I think it's the emotional expression of resurrection. That's what I think. The emotional expression of resurrection. Now, that can be different for everybody. I mean, for some people, rebirth was the day that they accepted Jesus, and they humbled themselves, and they believed in Jesus, they realized who he is, and they mark it in their calendar, or their diary, or their Bible, and they, I was born again on such and such a day. It was an intellectual realization. For some people, it's a tearful experience where they realize they're a sinner and they cry, and it's a very emotional thing. For other people, it's just some kind of it's not much realization to it. They just surrender, and maybe they have mystical experiences or something. I don't know. But I think we use the word rebirth or reborn for all those people, and seems to me it's an emotional expression of their resurrection, whatever kind of resurrection they had, whether it was intellectual or emotional or mystical or whatever kind of resurrection experience they had. That's my, I don't know what better answer to give for it. If you have a better answer, that's fine, but that's what I think it is. We should have that. Father said we should feel reborn. I mean, I agree with that 1,000%. We should feel so pumped up by what we've been given by true parents that our life is just transformed. We're, you know, I'm praying for you people every day of this webinar that it's a rebirth experience for you, that you have a life-changing experience. That's why I'm here. I'm trying to be a catalyst for that, and that's all I'm hoping, because Father wanted that, and God wants that, and we all want that. We'll see. So the providence of resurrection for people on earth. Well, you know, Adam and Eve fell to a place where they were, you know, at a lower quality of life than nature, because we had fallen nature now. And, you know, animals kill each other to eat, but they don't kill each other to get their tennis shoes or because they don't like the way they look or whatever like that. So we became really bad. And then God started a providence of restoration and convinced human beings eventually that there's a God and that there's one God. And the first one to really get that that we know of was Zarathustra, founder a long time ago of Zoroastrianism, and that rubbed off and influenced the Abrahamic faith and the Hebrews. They believed in one God. It's a very sophisticated faith, actually, very amazing. And so anyway, the one God movement took hold for the providence through Abraham and his lineage. And then Moses came in, and he brought us up another level in our coming back to life and introduced the Ten Commandments and 613 laws. I don't know if Moses had that much to do with all of it. But anyway, you know, Father even said once that he didn't really like the Ten Commandments. Didn't like them. And the reason was because they're very exclusive. In other words, they're very judgmental. In other words, with the Ten Commandments, you're either good or you're bad. And Father just doesn't feel like that's God's point of view toward people. And in fact, you know, it was the Ten Commandments in action that put Jesus on the cross, wasn't it? So, he's not so fond of that kind of guidance of how to live our life. And then Jesus came along and he said, well, you know, you can boil those 613 laws down into two: love God above all things and love your neighbor as yourself. And that was a revolutionary thing. But the point here is that, well, okay. And then true parents come along and say, well, just live for the sake of others. I mean, if you really sincerely do that, you're doing everything. You're doing it all. And so that's been the course of restoration from the fall, and we could qualify ourselves by living a principled life to be in the kingdom of heaven. But the thing is those people who didn't really live that way and accomplish what they could have accomplished in their physical life, which is everybody, we can come back, as we said before, and cooperate with people in the physical world and grow ourselves by cooperating with earthly people. The Bible says there's a very interesting thing here about casting out evil spirits. I think a lot of ministers or Christian people are not aware of this passage, but he said, when the unclean spirit has gone out of a man, he passes through through waterless places seeking rest. That means the spirit world. He's wandering around looking for some place to rest. But he finds none. Then he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it empty, swept, and put in order. Then he goes and brings with him seven other spirits more evil than himself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man becomes worse than the first. Very interesting. So apparently here, Jesus had cast out some evil spirits out of somebody. He did that 11 times. And apparently that person got worse than before. And so somebody came to him and asked him about it. What's going on here, Jesus? And here's his answer of what happened. See, when we go to Cheongpyeong, It's a very different place than just some place where people kick out evil spirits. That's not what's going on there. It's not what's going on there. I mean, there's lots of places like that, right? TV evangelists kicking out evil spirits. That's not... In Changpyeong, there's this 100-day workshop in the spirit world, right? We're trying to actually heal the living and the dead. We're trying to help those spirits so they can become better spirits. They can repent themselves clean and become helpful to our lives. I mean, we're trying to resurrect them in the spirit world. Nobody's doing that. That's what we do there. We're trying to heal the living and the dead. It's a marvelous opportunity that you don't find that anywhere. So, but here Jesus is saying, you know, you just kick out an evil spirit and look out. And ministers who cast out evil spirits, or Christian people or others too, they'll tell you that if the person who was liberated from the evil spirits doesn't maintain a high standard of spirituality from that point, they'll come back. And they'll come back. Yeah. They'll tell you that. And so, what about those people who didn't have the benefit of living, you know, at the time of Jesus or true parents or Moses? Well, it's good news, as you know. This is just a refresher, but, you know, but the important message here in this is that not only those spirits who lived before Moses and the Ten Commandments, who didn't have the benefit of that guidance in their life, they can come back and associate themselves with people in Moses' era and afterwards and resurrect with those people. But the point here that's important is not that. The point here that's important is the people on earth have to be living it. You know, if they just believe in the Ten Commandments and believe in the laws of Moses, that isn't worth a hill of beans. It's not going to help anybody. Not going to help those people that much either. It's not going to help the people in the spirit world. Who cares what you believe? You think the God who created this whole universe cares what you think? It's how we live, how we transform ourselves. The Bible says we have to transform ourselves through the renewing of our minds. So, you know, it's good that they hear the word of God, but you got to live it, got to apply it, got to become it. And then you're resurrecting yourself. Then you're being reborn. You got to become it. You got to live it. You know, Father said the truth is not for the truth itself. The truth, he said, is given to lead us to the love of God. That's the purpose of the truth. So just believe in it. You know, I believe in true parents and the divine principle. God bless you, but ain't going to do much for you. You go to the spirit world with it, and that's all you got? You're going to be in for a big surprise. We're supposed to transform ourselves and become little true parents ourselves. We're supposed to become holy, divine people and families and spouses, right? I mean, it's about transformation. And if we're not busy about that work of transformation in ourselves, somehow we're out to lunch. We're not even in the game, you know, not even in the game. So, people who were living the Ten Commandments of Moses, then the, you know, people before them and their ancestry could resurrect through cooperating and participating and associating with those people living the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. And the same way goes for Christians. If people were living, not just believing in Jesus, but living a Christian life, trying to model their life after his sincerely, then people before Jesus came can associate themselves with those Christian people and they can resurrect themselves to the level of those Christian people, which is a higher level. And they can all see when the water rises, all the boats rise together. That's how it works, right? And those Christian people who lived 500 years ago, well, you know, if we are living a principled life and living a life of attendance and growing our spirit, then those ancestors can participate and associate with us, and they can benefit with us, and we can all grow together. When the water rises, all the boats go up together. So that's how it works. But the key important part of this chart here is about living it. You got to be living it, otherwise it's just not work. It doesn't work. And of course, it's not just the good spirits and the religious people who can benefit from this whole thing, but even the icky low spirits who are giving us a hard time and dragging us down. Because, well, I mean, let's face it, you can't resent them or hate them. They're people who grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and they need help. I mean, have you ever met people who just complain and blame and criticize all the time from morning till night? I know people like that. It's how they grew up. It's how they live. It's their habit. It's all they know. When they die and they lose their physical body and go to the spirit world, they're the same way. And so when they come to associate with you, that's what they give you. Because that's the only way they know how to relate. I mean, have you ever met a guy or a girl and they're attracted to you, they want to be close to you, they even feel affection for you, but all they do is taunt you and bully you and kind of say mean things to you because that's all they know how to relate. They don't know how to relate in a nice, beautiful, kind, and loving way. And it's very sad. They don't know how to relate any other way because that's all they know. And that's the trap of a lot of low spirit people. They want to love, but they don't know how. And so we really need to help them. And so we all get resurrected together. They help us by challenging us and giving us a hard time and things we overcome. And we have a common base with them too. But maybe we're doing better than they did and they benefit from it. I'll give you a story about that later. So, even the different religions, whether you're a Muslim, a Jew, a Buddhist, Christian, can come to true parents, right? True parents come to true parents, and they can, become in the. We're trying to create one family of God under God, one family under God and true parents, right? We're one family of mankind. That's what we're, and all these people can come through their different doorways and their different paths to come to truth. That's why Father instituted so many amazing programs and projects during his life, right? And I'm very, very heartbroken to see so many of these things fall by the wayside. They're not there anymore. You know, you young people need to go out there and rekindle, you know, find a project that Father started that you are inspired about and that isn't there anymore, and just make up your mind, hey, you know, by the time I'm 40, I'm going to get that going again. I'm going to build it myself because this is what Father started and he wanted to see it go, and I'm going to recreate it. I'm going to do that. I hope some of our young people feel like carrying that torch and doing that kind of thing. But so all these people can, you know, the scientists, the professors, the World Peace Academy, the social workers, the politicians, the Nobel Prize winners, and the interfaith work that we did all comes together through the different doorways that Father made for them to come together and learn and discover true parents and the principle. Wow, what an incredible story. Somebody has to make a movie about this. So the question is, what kind of ancestor are you going to be for your descendants? Are you going to be wind under their wings and fluff them up and with your talents and your gifts and your musical ability and your artistic ability and your spirituality and your prayer and life and your sensitivity and your compassion? I hope so. Or are we going to drag them down with our unresolved fallen natures and things our bad habits that, you know, they're going to need to be worked out by somebody? We hope we don't burden our grandchildren, great-grandchildren with that, right? But somebody will. That's the way it's going to be. Now, you know, if we apply the principle in our life, and especially the principles of restoration we're going to talk about later, we can literally change our fortune. You could say destiny, but I guess fortune is the right word. You know, people have different fortunes. Some people have a money fortune. I've noticed that among our Jewish brothers and sisters. It's just amazing to me, you know. They can do the stupidest business things and make millions of dollars. I don't know. I mean, I can, you know, other people can do really brilliant, good idea businesses and work hard at it, can't make a dime. Anyway, people have different fortunes. And the good news is we can actually change our fortune. We can do that by taking responsibility and by helping our ancestors. I wanted to share a couple of stories with you. One is about changing our destiny, our fortune. I grew up with a very poor money fortune. I was in a poor family and we just didn't have much, and that doesn't have anything to do with it, but I was a single guy when I met the church. I had my motorcycle, I was living in a free house, and I just didn't have many obligations, and I joined the church, and I was a leader in a number of states and this and that. And then Father announced one day in New York, as you might remember, some of you, that that all these state leaders have failed and they're going to go to Africa. And we thought, whoa. I mean, we really thought we were going to Africa. And they said, well, there's a bus outside the New Yorker Hotel. You guys just go and get in the bus. You're going to Africa. And we thought, wow, we're going to Africa. And of course, we didn't go to Africa, but we went to a hotel, and Colonel Pock was there and explained to us that Africa is a mission in America. He finally needed people to work on political, social level, right? And you couldn't be a recognized leader in the church if you're going to work on social, political things. So it might violate our tax exemption status. So we had to separate from the church. And Father didn't want us to go out, you know, empty-handed and take a lot of time to raise money for our families. And, you know, so he gave us a Taurus car and some moving money and a minimal income for a while. And Colonel Pock made it very clear to us, this income is not going to last very long, okay? It's just for a while to help you get going so you can hit the ground running. And we all said, yes, we understand. But only one of the Africa Mission people actually took that to heart, built a financial foundation under himself before the money stopped coming, and that wasn't me. So anyway, here I was in Casper, Wyoming, and a little, very little town, and I didn't pay any attention to that when it comes down to it. And here it comes. One day, the day came when the money stopped and there was no income. And here I am, you know. I'm 45 and I have a wife and two little kids and no money. And so I'd never been in that situation before. So I thought, well, you know, we decided, my wife and I, that I needed to start a business, because all you could make was $4.50 minimum wage there at the time, and nobody can live on that. So I found out about this business that this one lady in Idaho had started, who was a very close person to our movement, a Mormon lady, and she started this great business to help people get out of debt. So I signed up, I got the training, I started the business back home, and I was all pumped up about it because it was a great thing. You know, it was a great thing. You could turn a normal person's life totally around financially and help them to become very comfortable just learning how to manage their money in a brilliant way. It was great, you know, but nobody was doing it at that time. Only she was like the first. And it just sounded too good to be true. And the banks wanted to run me out of town because they wanted that interest money. They didn't want people not paying their interest to the banks and so on and so on. I tried every way I could think of to make that business fly, and I just couldn't do it. I ended up using up this money that my Japanese in-laws had given us for our kids' future. And my wife still won't let me forget about that. But anyway, you know, she said, look, you know, you just don't have any money fortune at all. Your ancestors are probably a bunch of monks. They probably don't even care about money. Probably gave it all away. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. I never really did care about money. I never struggled about money. So here I am. I have no money fortune. I can work hard and not make a dime. Bad. So I got a job with American Express because they had a financial advisory arm that they'd give you an income for a year to help you get going, and I learned the ropes of that and kind of transferred into that. And I worked there for 10 years. But sum total, the first 3 years of my efforts with the debt elimination business and the financial advising. My point of this whole story is this. After investing in other people's financial lives, trying to help other people with their financial situation, something happened to me. Like Beethoven. Something happened. I don't know, one day to the next. I mean, it was nothing to do with the skills I had learned or the knowledge. I was going to the same office with the same clients. Nothing had changed, but my spirit world definitely changed. Something happened. It just flipped. And all of a sudden, money started coming to me. I mean, I made serious money, six figures. I didn't get rich or anything, but it was just unbelievable. Until I quit later, because it just wasn't my life. But the point is, and that never stopped. I mean, that money fortune changed for me permanently because I invested in other people's financial lives. It's not quick. It's not easy. It's not a pill, but it can be done. I know it because I experienced it. And the point is, I'm saying, is that people outside of our movement, if we get the word out there and they come to understand this, they're going to be lined up at our door, banging on the door, wanting to get in here. You can change your destiny. It's not quick, it's not easy, but you can change it. And a lot of people would give anything for that. We have such gems of gold and diamonds in our pockets, we don't even know what we got. And let me tell you another thing, a little testimony as a conclusion here. Help your ancestors, it says here. You know, I was living there at the time, and I was thinking one day, how can I help my ancestors? Father was telling us to help our ancestors. What? How can I do that? I don't even know my ancestors. How can I help them? And then I reflected on my German grandfather, who had passed away some years ago before that, and I realized, you know, boy, he had a problem. He was a very self-centered person. I mean, he was a good man. He was a justice of the peace, a very righteous man, actually. But in relation to his wife, my grandmother, he was so selfish. He had everything he could dream of wanting. He had his fish and stuff, his boat, his guns, his dogs, his auto repair shop. He had his two-way radios. He had everything he could want as soon as he wanted it. But, you know, when my father and his brothers grew up and moved away, my grandmother, you know, she, fortunately, in this little tiny country town where they lived, about 100 homes, there was another German lady lived there who spoke German, and they got together often, and they'd sit and chat and had a good time. So she had a life. But then my grandfather decided one day, well, I want to move down by the river so I can fish more. So he just packed up the homestead and built a house down by the river, and they all moved down by the river, him and my grandmother, and my grandmother's life came to an end. I mean, no friend, nobody living down there by the river by him. Nobody there, no town there. Can you imagine? And even some years after they moved there, they're still packing moving boxes, sitting in the corner of the room, no carpet, no drapes. It's hard to tell the story, you know? Anyway, my grandfather passed away suddenly for no good reason, really, and my grandmother ended up dying in a nursing home, or in a hospital. No, in the nursing home where she had worked for many years. Just all curled up in a fetal position, full of resentment. It's hard to look at. Anyway, so that's it. So I thought, wow, I know my grandfather. I bet his problems went back for generations. He didn't come up with that all by himself. So I thought, I talked to my wife about it. I said, I want to do something for my ancestors. I want to do something for my grandfather. So we made a plan, and I made a 120-day condition. And three things. First of all, I prayed for my wife every day. Second thing, I did something for my wife every day. I ran the sweeper, I did the wash the dishes or something. And the third thing is I gave her some money, you know, $3 or $5 or whatever. She gave me the dollars back and I gave them to her again the next day. It's nothing to do with the money. It's just the action of putting it in her hand, you know, giving it to her. And so I did this for 120 days, and I prayed in the prayer room and offered it up to heaven and finished the condition, didn't think a lot about it. And the next day I was in the kitchen washing dishes because it became a habit. And guess who showed up? I mean, I didn't visibly see my grandfather, but there was no mistake about it. He came and he was standing next to me in the kitchen when I was washing those dishes. My grandfather came there, and I'm telling you, he was so grateful. All I felt from him was, thank you. Thank you so much from my grandfather. See, I was representing him. I was doing it on his behalf. I was doing something that he never did so that he could experience it, so he could grow by it with me. And it helped him a lot. It helped him a lot. So I just throw that out there to you as an example from my own life that, you know, maybe you can reflect on your ancestors. Maybe it'll mean something to you. I don't know. So, God does not decide your destiny. I was teaching a young man from the campus for a long time about, he grew up in a Jehovah Witness home, so family. So he believed God was a big judge and he's going to send you to heaven or hell, right? And he was so moved and so relieved to learn in the principle that God is not like that. He's not the big judge. That actually we decide where we go. It's me that decides my destiny. It was a big thing for him. It's a big thing. We have so many gems for people. People are dying for this stuff. We just sit on it. I don't know what to say. So returning resurrection, spirit world can only help us and get benefit if we apply the principle in our life and live it. It's the only way it can happen. It's not gonna, you know, there was a guy in the community one time who said, "Where's Jesus anyway? I thought he was going to lead all these Christians to true parents. I don't see anything going on." And I said, "Well, wait a minute." I said, "You know, there's got to be a trigger event. A trigger event. In other words, you got to get in the face of a Christian person and witness to them and share with them. And even if they persecute you, it doesn't make any difference, because when you get in their face, then Jesus or some good Christian ancestor will come to them and say, 'Hey, he's talking to a Mooney. Hell, let, you know, and start working in his life.'" There's got to be a trigger event. We got to get off the couch and get in their face. Otherwise, nothing's going to happen. So returning Father, so who's doing this stuff? Just Father? So we sit on the bench on the sidelines with our pom-poms and, "Hey, Ra, Father, Mother, go for it. Build that kingdom. Adieu and Manse." I don't think so. We got to get some skin in the game. Father said, "I can't do this by myself." I brought a very high level ambassador to Las Vegas the last time Father spoke there. And he'd worked with us for many, many years. And he got up there and he gave this incredible speech before Father spoke, you know, and it was so moving. I mean, people almost gave him a standing ovation. It was so powerful. It was embarrassing, actually, because it was too good, you know what I mean? And so Father was behind the curtain in his wheelchair, and you know, after this was done and Father was introduced, he came out on stage. Father got out of his wheelchair and hobbled over to the podium and propped himself up. And of course, as he had give and take with the audience, his power, his energy level went way up and he became like a lion again. But in the middle of Father's speech, he stopped. And he looked down in the front row and he said, Mr. Ambassador, he said, "That was a great speech, but when are you going to help me?" So, who's doing all this? Father and us. We got to do it. I mean, it's the ball's in our court, right? We got to do this stuff. And one last point. You know, many people really love our interfaith activities. It's wonderful. We have interfaith programs. We sit down together. We have tea and cookies, and we talk about each other's faith. We get to appreciate each other and learn about what each other thinks and how we worship and this and that. We're doing it here as I speak. But, you know, I mean, people are doing that all over town. Lots of churches are doing that, and God bless them all for doing it. It's a good thing to do, and we should do more of it. But some people get the impression that we're an interfaith movement. Well, we do interfaith activity. It's a good thing to do. It helps people to become familiar with true parents and the principle and the providence. But in another sense, we are not an interfaith movement. In other words, you know, that's all nice. And when people get done with their nice interfaith movement, you know, program, they go back home and they go back to the life the way they had it. You know. That's not where we're going. And even people, you know, we bring people to these interfaith blessings, right? They drink the holy wine. They put a picture of true parents on the wall. But that's not really where we're going either. Father said, everybody in the world needs to become like us and better. In other words, the future of the world, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, is not one where we have a Muslim world which people have true parents' picture on their wall and they drank the holy wine, but they still pray, bow five times and pray for death to the infidels every day. And I mean, they're still, you know what I'm trying to say? That's not where we're going. That's not the goal. That's not the destination. The destination is one human family under God and true parents. They might still admire and revere Muhammad and Buddha and Jesus and everybody, but true parents needs to become the Messiah for all of them. And should be. Why not? So, you know, we can't water this stuff down. We got to be clear where we're going. You know, it's good to do interfaith activities. We need to do more of it, but that's really not our destination. We're not trying to, you know, I think you understand what I'm saying.